Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Hello, my name is Karen, and I call myself the Chief Excitement Officer of my company, Cryo Slices. I will be your host for this punchy, pragmatic, and inspiring series called Risk, where we aim to reframe risk through a kingdom lens. I am so excited about hosting this series because the topic impacts everyone in a career or business. And having been an entrepreneur for over 25 years, spanning the entire supply chain from research and development in the medi and aesthetics technology space, right through to global exports and raising capital at various stages, I too have had to face risk on multiple occasions. Our guest today is Lerato Tokiso, who has the most unusual journey, starting out in big corporate and taking the leap into entrepreneurship. Lerato is no stranger to risk and has a world of experience in the legal and social justice space, helping companies navigate and manage risk themselves. So we look forward to gleaning from her experience and insights. Welcome, Lerato.
Thank you so much, Karen. What a privilege to be part of this conversation, a topic that is really, really close to my heart. By way of introduction, just to add on to what you said, I'm a believer. I believe in God as a central part of my life. I'm a wife to Champ, and I'm a mother to two beautiful girls who are 9 and 10. And I'm a nation builder. But with all of that said, by training, I'm an attorney. And it's been a colorful journey, as you mentioned, the most unconventional journey, not quite a straight line. And a fun fact about myself is that in university, it's a bit of a story, but in university, a friend of mine dared me to enter a beauty pageant, a provincial pageant, and I had never modeled before, okay? But she said to me, it. I dare you. And I did. And guess what, Karen? I actually won.
Awesome. So you brains and beauty. I think that's so special. Thanks for sharing that. So Lerato, you've used your legal skills as an attorney in a unique way. You began your career practicing in one of the big law firms. Then you worked in the social justice space in environmental law, first representing communities affected by mining activities, and then later worked as in-house counsel for the big mining companies themselves. You've also worked with business leaders for many years and then decided to become an entrepreneur yourself. I am curious to find out why you didn't take the low-risk route. Instead, you chose to leap into entrepreneurship.
So as you know, the law is a very versatile career, and there's so many different avenues with which you could explore how you use the law. But the typical route that most know about is that you would, you know, complete your university studies and then proceed on to your articles in ideally a big firm, and then qualify, write some board exams, go to law school, and then, you know, go to the High Court for admission, and then practice as an attorney and work your way up to partner. And so I think that's sort of the typical route that we're mostly familiar with. My route, however, wasn't that, as you've described. So I did work in a big law firm, but my curiosity would not keep me in the same place. And I really was curious about how to most effectively use the law as a tool to work with the people that were my clients. And so through the various environments that I've had the privilege of working in, first in, you know, a big firm, and then I went in the social justice space, like you said, Karen. I worked defending communities impacted by mining, negotiating with mine CEOs to see how best we could navigate and find middle ground, you know, as they mitigated risk while also thinking about the communities that were impacting as they ran their businesses. there was this burden on my heart to really use the law as a tool, like I said, but to provide a space that would create proactive legal services, right? So often when clients approach us, it would be because there's a crisis, you know, and obviously would resolve the crisis. But what I've been doing in the journey of business has been to say, how do we solve the crisis but build beyond it? How do we think ahead in terms of how the law can be used to mitigate any potential threats or risks to your business? And so that's what I've been doing for the last almost 10 years now in the world of entrepreneurship. And it has been an exciting ride, such a privilege to partner with so many different companies.
And how did you navigate that risk, that leap into entrepreneurship? Had you saved up? Did you have a whole plan? Did it feel risky for you? Was it a big leap? Because often people that go from corporate into entrepreneurship take that risk in their lives. It's usually a financial one because it's quite cozy and cushy to kind of sit in corporate and earn a nice salary and get your benefits and, you know, pension and medical aid. Can you just speak around that for us?
So the leap into entrepreneurship for me was almost something I've known from very young. I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. Karen, I mean, every other member of my family is running some sort of business. So my dad ran multiple stores as we grew up, and he trained us when we were young. There was nothing for free, my dear. You would come in, if you need a toiletry for that month, you would work for it. He'd teach you how to work the till. So I knew numbers from a young age. My mom also was very industrious. She had a boutique, etc. So just giving you that backdrop to say it wasn't like I woke up one day and go, geesh, you know, it might be great. No, I do have a very, very meticulous husband as well. And so, as you know, I mean, when you're married, you don't just off and make your decisions right on your own. So we sat through and we talked about it. But what was fascinating, Karen, about our journey is that we sensed the call into business around the same time. You know, typically what happens is that the one will stay in corporate in a comfortable sort of, hey, we have a monthly income kind of job. And then the other would jump in and then gradually there's this progression. No, no, my dear, for Champ and I, around 2016. And we had two small babies and we just thought, Lord, are you serious? But because my husband is a chartered accountant, I think we had at least considered the numbers. We had considered the impact. We had considered that it may take time to pick up, etc. And so we did apply ourselves in some way in terms of prepping for the journey ahead. But to be honest, I don't think it was something, I mean, it was a tough call, right? It was a tough call, but we just both knew so strongly that it was time.
That is so inspiring, especially because both of you took that leap. I mean, that just doubles the risk. But I love that you did plan, and that you both numbers or both analytical people and very diligent in your planning and using your left brain, unlike most of us entrepreneurs that leap without very much planning at all. So Lerato, how would you personally define risk? And that could be from a personal or a professional capacity. What would your definition be?
So that is such a brilliant question around what risk is. And the typical sort of simple definition of risk is that it's a chance of something happening that will have a negative impact, right? So it's the potential of something going wrong. And so that's what we try and mitigate when we say we're mitigating risk. But the definition that the definition that I love is a quote by Warren Buffett. And he says, risk is not knowing what you're doing. And, you know, when I read that quote, I just thought, what a remarkable way to define this concept. And for me, it speaks about the fact that we all have blind spots at any given point in time. Even if we're experts and specialists, we should never be so proud to think there's not another piece to this puzzle that could potentially put risk in the mix. And so I really like that perspective of risk, and keeps you in check as well, even as a professional, to say what else could be considered as we make this decision, as we take this step. But from a biblical lens, I think Luke 14 verse 28 is such a remarkable reminder about the importance of considering risk. Like, whether we're building a business, whether we're building a family, an organization, a church, whatever it may be, Luke 14:28 cautions us to say, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit and estimate the cost and evaluate essentially whether you're able to pull through the entirety of this project? So that scriptural base gives us such solid ground around, don't just run into it. Consider the cost, consider the impact, consider the potential implications, not just for you, but for the people you work with, for the communities you work with, for the clients you work with, for the stakeholders that are part of your value system. So it can never at any point just be about you. And so that is a beautiful reminder and marker of our responsibility, you know, as we build, as we navigate in this ever-changing world and context.
That is such an insightful way to look at risk. And it seems to me that there really is a fundamental difference between being an entrepreneur and taking risk and being a lawyer and taking risk. And while you were chatting, I was just thinking about my own journey as an entrepreneur. And at first I thought to myself, oh man, I did none of that. I did not count the cost. I didn't really plan. I only put business plans together to raise capital and for the purpose of the grant funding or whoever needed it for that purpose, but not diligently being a planner. And all of a sudden I remembered that I did get myself into a business incubator. And that is one way that entrepreneurs can apply that principle that you said, because I struggled to find a mentor. I struggled to find an individual that could counsel me, that could help me think through the pitfalls, that could help me avoid some of those pitfalls, plan properly. But being in a business incubator with lots of accountability and those mentors inside that structure really, really helped a lot. And I learned so much about mitigating some of that risk through that wise counsel. And I'm really, really grateful for that, because I guess there's a difference, Lerato, between good risk and bad risk.
Karen, risk is such a broad and diverse topic, but I love that, you know, the demarcating it into the two sections, there's good risk and then there's bad risk. And I think you're absolutely right around entrepreneurs partnering with incubators, et cetera, and really getting support in some shape or form, not being the only one to make the decision. Because I've realized, you know, just as we're about to talk about good versus bad risk, that sometimes we can justify our way into really bad decisions. And so that accountability really works. If you really want something, it's so easy to convince yourself that it's the right thing to do, irrespective of the red flags. You know, at a high level, for me, what helps me when I make decisions is, as a believer, the Bible is my frame of reference. It's the word of life. It's the word I go to when I make decisions. And so going back to the word and staying in the confines of the word helps me understand that, okay, this nature of risk is still within biblical confines. And so that's how I define good risk, right? Obviously, there are practical elements to it, you know, and considering the cost, like we said in Luke 14, that counting that cost, evaluating the potential consequences of our decisions, reflecting on the stewardship element you have when it comes to the decisions you're about to take, and applying ourselves with due care and skill. We see that wording in a lot of the governance documents and papers, but it really means that, would a reasonable person in your position have come to the same or a similar conclusion, or were you plain old reckless? And then bad risk, from a biblical perspective for me, means taking matters into your own hands, doing your own thing, manipulating systems, paying bribes, really just rigging the system to suit yourself. And we all know that that always ends in tears, Karen. We've seen multiple reports of many different huge organizations come to nothing as a result of those kind of decisions. You know, I'm not going to mention any names because we have so many case studies, both locally and globally, you know, about moments where bad risk was taken, where poor accountability was in place, where, you know, the environment was just conducive for behavior that was out of turn, essentially. Because typically, if you think about the organizations we find ourselves in, we are stewards. We are there to manage projects, resources, etc., and even people. And so how we conduct ourselves in those environments really matters. Will we be perfect? No, we will never be perfect. But at every point in time, we need to reflect on, what is my reasonable responsibility here? Is it the law I must consider? Is it a framework I must consider? Is it a course I need to attend? Is it a resource I need to bring in? Is it a skill I need to bring in? So there's so much in terms of that. So good risk within biblical confines, good stewardship, due care and skill for a person in your chair. Bad risk, taking matters into your own hands, rigging the system, trying to do it your own way, bypassing legislation and law and paying your way up. That is always... You can escalate quickly, but you will drop so quickly. We see this day after day after day.
And I remember when I was brand new out of the starting blocks on my entrepreneurial journey, and I was sitting in my lounge, almost wondering where to start and where to go. And all God did for about the first 2 weeks of taking this leap out into entrepreneurship was take me through the book of Deuteronomy, and mostly chapter 28, blessings and curses. If you obey the law, if you do things right, etc., they're blessings, but they're curses for a lack of integrity, if you want to sum it up into one word. And at some point I stopped and I said, goodness me, Lord, am I that bad that you are hammering on about integrity? And he said to me, no. He said, what you're going into business is fraught with temptation. And fraught with the opportunity to take shortcuts, to do things unethically, even in the smallest degree. And he was warning me. And I kid you not, the very first opportunity I had to get a bit of grant funding, there was quite an opportunity or temptation to tweak things a little, to go a little bit into the gray to get more money out of the grant. And because God had warned me so severely, there was no ways I was going that way. And I'm so glad I passed the test, because what happened, and this is often what we don't talk about, is that when we risk with God to not take things into matters into our own hands, to do things the right way, responsibly and ethically, there are blessings. There's an upside. And I remember the window, I took a tiny bit of this grant. I could have got so much more, but I knew that within their mandate, that's all I was entitled to. And I stuck to that rigorously. And after that, the windows and doors opened wide of heaven, opened so wide. And I managed to access 3 million rands worth of, in bits and pieces, over a 2-year period, of soft money, grant funding, soft loans to fund my business. God opened every one of those doors. And so I love that governance is your passion. I love that, you know, what you said, that God is serious about us doing things his way and not taking matters into our own hands. So Lerato, it seems that we agree that taking risks is an inherent part of business. So do you think that we can actually create risk by not taking risk? So if we play it safe?
Yeah. So the moment you set foot and say, I'm raising my hand to run this thing, you are stepping into risk. But what's interesting about this is that sometimes we think that inaction keeps us safe from risk. You know, I've heard this quote that says indecision in itself is a decision. And so you have to live with the consequences of whatever decision or indecision you take. There's no middle ground. You have to take a stand for something. And so I do agree that sometimes we create risk unintentionally by not taking the risk because we're too afraid or we're overanalyzing something, etc. And one example of that is, you know, when you consider in an organization, if you want this organization to stand the test of time, to outlive you as a leader or founder, there's an element we need to think about that says, what is the succession plan of this organization, right? And so often leaders and founders struggle with that transition. Sometimes we're still dealing with our own issues, insecurities, etc., that we don't delegate sufficiently. So if something happens to us, then we create a massive Keeman risk within our organizations. And this happens all the time, right? We just make the assumption that it would never happen to us. I would never get sick, or I would never die abruptly, or whatever the case may be. And so that is one of the ways where if we fail to delegate, we are in fact creating a new risk, which is a keyman risk, right? That if something happens to the keyman, the organization comes to an absolute halt. I have seen this in real time. And then, of course, yes, we do create risk by taking risks sometimes as well. So it's not just the inaction, but it's the actual action and the steps of decisions that we can take. Historically, one of our clients had an offer for significant funding, et cetera, and partners that wanted to come in and, you know, potentially buy a stake within their business. And I mean, they were bringing some significant funds, right? And so as a growing business, that's really appealing and attractive, particularly where you have the manpower and the IP, but you don't quite have the cash. And so one of the challenges I've seen in terms of risk is rushing and acting in haste. Where an opportunity comes, it's got this quick deadline and you must have it over the line within 7 days. And the attorneys are like, just, what do you mean 7 days? We need to go through the documents. And so often there's one or two people who have so much authority that they're able to just bypass those protocols. And it always comes back, Karen, I've seen in my experience, to bite you. Either, you know, taking that decision in haste could potentially create new risks, like you haven't looked through the fine print in enough detail, right? So you're creating challenges that you didn't anticipate. You're rushing ahead of your time. You're putting everybody under pressure. You're not quite giving the specialists you brought on board to provide you with the right type of input. Because sometimes it just means change this clause, amend this and edit that, so that you create breathing room and space for yourself. And so haste is also one I want to be careful with, because sometimes if you're a personality type that overthinks, overanalyzes, being too slow is the contrast of that. So taking too much time to contemplate a matter and then, you know, eventually by the time you're ready, the opportunity's moved right by. So that's also a risk. So there's this middle ground that we have to navigate with wisdom and with a very careful balance of, you know, kind of enough speed, but not too much.
It seems like risk is polar opposites, or has its polar opposites. So on the one hand, rushing in, doing things too quickly, not counting the cost, not planning, making those hasty decisions, especially if they're big ones, like taking on partners and capital and the likes, on that end of the scale, versus complacency, not actually putting the right things in place, not taking the right leaps, like succession planning. And let me tell you, that is a tough one, because it's risky to hand over things to people. It's risky to let go of the steering wheel for most leaders and most entrepreneurs, and to say, okay, I'm going to take a risk on this team or these individuals, let them make the mistakes, let them have little failures and challenges along the way for the big picture. I was reminded about something that happened to us on our journey in terms of being too hasty. I'd love to get your insights into what you think we should have or could have done differently, perhaps. So we acted in haste, but to do good corporate governance. We like to dot the I's and cross the T's in our business. And all of a sudden, our industry body in the cosmetic industry called all of us together as manufacturers or importers and told us that there was a new bioprospecting law that had come into place. And wanting to be so diligent about crossing the T's and dotting the I's, we were one of the first companies out of the starting blocks to comply with this legislation. But it actually turned out to be a negative. Very long story short, we got caught up in legislation that actually wasn't ready to be implemented. There was lots of corruption and some not nice things around it from a government perspective. And we nearly lost our business. Not being able to supply product, being delayed getting certificates in order to trade. We had put ourselves out there. Government were now aware that we were one of these companies. I think they were trying to target us so they could target the rest of our industry and make money out of our industry. I was even on 702 about it. And it was terrifying. We lost millions and we nearly lost our business in its entirety. So what are your thoughts around haste, but to do the right thing?
Sure, Karen. I'm so, so sorry to hear about your experience. And I'm also delighted to know that you have been able to weather that storm. And I commend you actually for being a fast adopter. And in hindsight, there's always so much reflection. But at the time, you do what you can with what you have. But hindsight is such a brilliant teacher, Karen. And based on what you said, it sounds like it was so traumatic. I don't think you're going to forget those lessons anytime soon. But
no.
So as I think about your example speaks to the fact that at that point in time, you clearly had some level of confidence in the lawmaker, right? But I'm not sure now. We'll have coffee about that afterwards.
Even about the governing body of our industry, to be quite honest.
You know what I mean? Exactly. So we'd have to have a separate conversation on that. But trust has been breached because what you did as an organization was to step in and adhere to the rules of the day so that you could continue operating and trading effectively in a meaningful way and in a way that adheres to the law. Good governance, et cetera, at play, but perhaps a little bit too rushed. And that is the lesson that we get to drink from. That is the well we get to drink from this morning, that, you know, trust is such a key pillar in embarking on any governance initiative, whether it's the lawmaker in the country, whether it's a global standard. If I don't trust the decision maker, the likelihood of compliance is low. What is the likelihood, Karen, that you would go and do the same thing next year if they came up? You would probably let the industry jump through several hoops before you decided to comply. Yes, you'd ask a few questions, you'd push back a little bit more, etc., as opposed to blindly following the standard, right? Because you have learned and there's that trust deficit that's been created, which will force you to then engage the matter in a different way. So yeah, I really am glad that you were able to weather the storm. And I'm so sorry it cost you so much money. And that's the thing, right? That's risk, the impact of risk. Even with the best intentions, sometimes there's still consequences that cost us money. And we then have to regroup and say, geesh, okay, how could we navigate this differently?
Exactly. And by the grace of God, and as you are speaking, I'm realizing all the things I could have done differently and should have done differently. I definitely acted in haste. And, you know, it's not like I wasn't aware of the fact that there's corruption in government. I think sometimes we just want to bury our heads in the sand and trust. It depends on the kind of leader or person that you are, how you are naturally wired. So if I think about my natural leadership style, it is to trust. It is to be open-handed and open-hearted. It is to include people. It is to give the benefit of the doubt. And sometimes wisdom says, no, I like what you've said a number of times, consider all the implications. There's no harm in asking questions, in digging in. And, you know, God works all things together. Praise the Lord for those who love him and called according to his purposes. Because what happened was we actually, for standing our ground and for the media exposure, we actually got government to engage with industry more proactively to slow down their processes, include us, and to make the process a lot smoother for everybody and not negatively impact every business in our industry. But talking about leadership, in what ways do you find leadership as a key factor in successfully taking risks?
So the importance of good leadership is right at the top, right? So because the leader is setting the tone for the organization, and the leader also needs to have a level of a tender heart and a thick skin, right? So you need to be able to stand your ground, but still be willing to engage people and matters that arise. And so I think good leadership is right at the top of successfully taking risk. And I mean, I often think of, you know, cell phones and how they've evolved, et cetera, and how there's some organizations that took the leap and said, look, we're going smartphone. And others who took a step back and said, oh, let's wait and see. You know, and so that leadership is what makes a difference. You need a bit of a crazy leader to take some of those risks in order to break new ground. One more quick point on the leadership piece is just having a team and being able to listen, which is one of my, I'm devoting myself to the skill and art of listening because I've just realized how much juice sits in a room when decisions are being made, how many different perspectives could shift the trajectory of your organization, your business, etc., when you actually give it an opportunity. How often do we as leaders sit and say, this is where we're going, this is what we're doing because we can, right? But taking the step back to say, is there anything you see that I don't see is a very key part of managing risk and mitigating potential consequences that could be avoidable.
Thank you very much. I wanted to ask on that point, what if an entrepreneur or an individual doesn't have a team yet? What can they do in a case like that? And perhaps they can't find a mentor, they're not in a business incubator, and they're really getting going for the first time out of the starting blocks in any aspect. What would your suggestion be?
Karen, you know, I think for a solopreneur, as they call them, or someone who's self-employed, I think the world we're in now provides so many resources. We, you know, if you just go online and search for the right tools, you're likely to find something. But my huge encouragement and a significant game changer for me and the business that, you know, we've been able to lead over the years has been the fact that we've sought out people with different perspectives, so that we're not just sitting convincing ourselves of a particular trajectory, but we allow ourselves to be challenged. So I would encourage someone in that position, step out, take a chance, take a risk. Mentorship is not just about someone who's older than you. Sometimes it's just even a peer you can sit with, have coffee with, commit to once a month or once a quarter, you know, and have like a, you know, some people call it a kitchen advisory board or whatever, a kitchen tea advisory board, where people just like a group of friends who, you know, maybe that may not resonate for men, but maybe a golf, whatever, a setting that makes sense for you, where you can pick the brains of people who are in business or whatever the case may be, or who have specific skills. I do encourage that. So I encourage entrepreneurs to step out and build a level of community. It's a long journey. It can be difficult. It can be lonely. And the likelihood of lying to yourself is high. And so it really is important to invite a level of community into your space so that you can make wholesome decisions and be challenged on your perspectives and grow. Because part of the gift of running a business is that you actually grow. You have to grow at a personal level in order to make decisions that are sound as well.
On that note, what are the most significant personal or professional growths you've experienced through taking risk?
What can happen for us as business people, entrepreneurs, and even aspirant entrepreneurs is we can run around so much and really waste time because there's so many incubators, so many opportunities. So there's so much going on in the world. It's a data-driven world. There are lots of events. There's lots going on, lots of opportunities. So the key has been to discern what is important for the journey I'm on and cut the rest out. Like the rest is noise for me because it's not kind of on my path. And so seeking the input counsel of peers and even elders. I've had the privilege of having a council of people around me all these years. And trust me, there's been moments of discomfort, moments of pruning as a result of that, where it's like, ma'am, we're not sure that this is aligned. People who can sing back the song that you sang when you first took the step. And so that's one. And then the other was when I really sensed I needed to slow down and take a sabbatical. And this was literally like a couple of months after COVID. And I mean, like, how do you take a break during or after COVID? People are working, people are trying to to make ends meet, my dear. Like, what is this? What kind of risk is this? But the way it worked out was also just leaning into the gentle whispers of the spirit and not undermining that as a soft issue. That's really the primary thing, right? Because you could build a business based on your own wisdom and like have to sustain it. But when you trust God with your decision-making, and I'm not talking about it in a very phony way, but I mean in a literal way, like, Lord, order my steps. Lord, show me, guide me. If there's an unsettled feeling, lean into that. Double click on offers that are made to you, etc. But the time of sabbatical for me was just not, from an outsider's perspective, was like, this is a bit wild that you would take time off at this point in your life or at this point in the world. But it was the best decision I could have taken at the time to just recalibrate, to rest, to reflect, to think clearly about the next steps. And again, the importance of having team to step in your absence and business continue without you is a real gift. And so, yeah, I would say that those are the two big things because, you know, often for entrepreneurs, I speak to entrepreneurs and business leaders daily. One of the big fears is the fear of not being needed. You know, and so getting out of the value chain meant I'm not going to be needed for 3 months. So God is the one who shepherds us and is our source. You know, we are not the be all and end all. And so I would leave it there to say, trust God with your life and your business and your decisions. And when something smells like a rat, it probably is.
If something smells like a rat, it probably is. Sometimes those rats expose themselves. Quite clearly, in our industry, in terms of exports and our documentation, the countries that are importing our products have to sometimes pay import duties and taxes. And I recall quite early on in our export journey that we would have some customers asking us whether we could give them two different invoices. The real invoice on what we're charging them, let's say $5 a piece, and they would pay us the full $5 a piece, and a second invoice for customs, which would declare that the value of the goods were $1 a piece, so that they could cheat the government on their side. And I was horrified. I was horrified. Now, I know that we stood the risk of losing those customers. And on the odd occasion, we did. We had customers that would only do business with us if we would give them the second invoice. And sometimes we actually chose to walk away from some of those customers. Because they long-term partnerships, they are our brand ambassadors in those countries. Our reputation expanded past what we could manage locally and internationally. And those were our representatives internationally. And we actually chose not to do business with some of those customers or let them represent our brands because of that. And we lost income. We lost the opportunity to be represented in that marketplace. And so it is a risk to smell a rat and to choose the right way or to apply good governance in your business.
Sure, Karen, that is a very, very real and practical example of what happens across the world. Some countries consider corruption as a cost of doing business, i.e. they have budget for acts of corruption, because that's just how corrupt that context is. Now, obviously, we don't quite agree with that perspective, but the fact that companies have to think that way is alarming. And it takes courage, Karen, to stand against something. And the fact that you made the right calls or you walked away doesn't make it any easier or less painful, because the reality is you had to, in that moment, count the cost of what you stood to lose. But because you value integrity in the market, that is the stand you took. And not everyone actually can afford to take that stand. And I'm speaking when people think about it and justify those decisions. It's like, this is my bread and butter. What then do I do? I don't think it's ever justifiable. But the reality is that it happens. And so that brings me to a thought that I've stewed over, Karen, around you know, infusing good governance in the way you do life, in the way you do business, is such a key thing. To take a stand for something, and taking a stand for something doesn't always make you popular, Karen. Sometimes you lose a client. Sometimes you take a stand within an organization where there's already this sort of view that everyone stands to benefit. If you just signed off those financials, everyone stands to benefit. But can I tell you, in my personal life, I know more than one person at a very close level who had to walk away, not just from a business, but from a work opportunity where they were appointed in a key position. And they had to make a call between putting their signature on a document that did not make any sense, that did not pass the standards of their industry, whether financial or whatever. And they made the call that, look, instead of putting my signature on this document, I would much rather leave this organization. Because 5 years from now, when an audit is conducted on this process, it is my signature on there. All of you would have moved on with your lives, but I would then have to face the music and the repercussions of this long arm of the law. It is tough. I'm not in any way undermining it. I've seen people literally overnight have to walk away, and it's tough, and the market is a little bit tight. But our hope and our faith is in God, because he's the one who opens the doors ultimately.
Beautiful. I was just thinking a question that we can ask ourselves when faced with these big decisions that we know are not right. You spoke about the newspaper in 5 years' time. I find that the truth always prevails one way or another. Sometimes it takes time, but one way or another, things come out. And I would ask myself, if my children, if my family, if my best friends, if my communities found out about what I was doing now, how would I feel? And perhaps that would help us, or those perhaps who maybe don't have a faith walk with God, to just protect themselves from making those bad decisions. Because one way or another, it's going to come back to us, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you. And I've also seen this pattern where sometimes the situation is so difficult that some people, you know, depending on your personality, etc., try and deny the reality. So because it's so, you feel it's so unreasonable that you almost freeze and you deny that the reality you're confronted with exists. That goes all the way back to our initial conversation about indecision remains a decision. Why didn't you say something? Why didn't you ask something? Those are the questions that we need to think about. And so we need courage, Karen. We need a lot of courage.
We need courage. In our space, it just, as you said, it is tough. And the world is getting tougher. The economic situations are not easy. And the temptation is great. But God is on the throne. He's able to keep providing for us. He's our source. And we just have to keep that straight and narrow path as best we can. Lerato, I've loved this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so, so much, Karen. I just thought of a couple of risks that maybe would be useful for someone who's listening today to think about. So I'll just share three quick things as my parting shots. One is, you know, the world of data, the world of, you know, technology is something to think seriously about now. One. Two is about timing, which we discussed a little bit earlier about haste or patience. That's the second thing to think about. And the third thing is your finances and your reputation. I just feel that as we move into this next phase of life and the world beyond tariffs and VAT increases or not, these things need to be top of mind. Why? So the first one is the world online, right? And we had this huge debate in one of our diplomacy lectures, and it was a question. I'm a very private person. And so being on social media takes a lot, right? I think it and I overthink it and I butcher it and I overbutcher it. But there's a part of being absent from that world that makes you almost irrelevant now. Being offline, people don't know who you are and what you're doing, right? So there's a part of it that is legitimate and that is justifiable, in my opinion, that you put your business online, you put your organization online, the work you do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then there's also the social side of that, right? Where you share your life, because there's this concept of being authentic. How much is too much, right? At what point does sharing your life become a risk? You know, we've seen in recent times where they've appointed a special envoy to the US. And immediately the first thing that happened was they went and did a check on this man and found potentially, I'm not sure how accurate it was, but they found data from 2016 that he had posted or comments he had made. And I'm saying, even as we navigate this world of tech, let's be very careful that we strike a careful balance between how much is too much and what's just enough. Right? There is still a part of your life, I personally think, you need to keep to yourself. Enjoy it, live it, be present. And then there's a part that is about sharing with the world what you do, because you're inviting them on the journey of your purpose and your vision. Financial risks as well, managing our resources with care, with diligence, planning, thinking, going back to Luke 14 and saying, have I considered where the world is going and what that means for my resources? Where can I trim? What can I align? Am I being overly, you know, luxurious about my decisions? Hey, maybe I don't need an office space. I actually could work from home, etc. Whatever those decisions are, we do need to think about the risks of operating in very volatile times. And we cannot ignore that there are changes, and we cannot ignore that we don't know what could change tomorrow. Because as we've seen just over the last month or two, that things can change overnight. And lastly, reputational is just, you know, your name is such an important thing. What do people think when they think of you, Karen? They think exceptional leader. They think a woman of integrity. They think astute businesswoman, impactful, whatever those things are, right? Your name is such an important tool of trade. Right? And trusting God that even with the decisions that we make, the steps that we take, the whatever dreams that we have on our hearts, the burdens we have, to say, do I want my name on this thing? And it goes back to the example of signing off fraught financials. Guard your name. Guard your name and trust that God is the one who will make your name great. He said, I will make your name great. You don't have to, you know, make your name great. Your actions, your conduct will speak for themselves. Maybe one day you and I will have a big cup of coffee and unpack the world's problems and solve them potentially as well. So thank you so, so much.
Oh, Lerato, I would love to solve the world's problem with a woman like you that puts God first. I love what you said about indecision is a decision, and that not taking a risk is a risk. Somebody needed to hear that today. And especially for us entrepreneurs that run gung-ho ahead into things, we need to take our time. We need to slow down, count the cost, plan. And on the other end of that extreme, not be complacent. And remember that risk is contextual. So we need to consider all the implications of our decisions and our risk-taking. Thank you for so many amazing insights and a wonderful discussion, Lerato. Thank you so much for your valuable time. God bless you.
Thank you so, so much, Karen.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.